they're still together, which is a miracle, actually. So let's talk a little bit about, probably I'm not going to speak about the same thing I'm going to speak about tomorrow, but so, and we can also have save you, because she's also a god sister.
Like, I can speak tomorrow. This is for your disciples.
But you're one of my disciples.
No, they don't want
to. I'm just teasing. So, So one thing I wanted to share is the potency, my experience of the potency of Srila Prabhupada's transcendental sound vibration. We often hear this verse in the Brahma and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Brahmanda Brahmate Kunda Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadigai Bhakti Latabish, that the living entity is wandering through many different bodies, universes, and somehow or other he gets this Bhakti Latabish, which means the seed of the creeper of devotion. And so this happens by the mercy of coming in contact with the pure devotee. So coming in contact with the pure devotee can occur not only in a vapu sense, but also, and even though the pure devotee may not be there physically, which is the case when I first came in contact with Prabhupada, one can have just as much potency in that association as one would have in the physical presence. And that's my realization, because the first time I came in touch with Prabhupada was in about 1968 or 69, sometime over there. It was right after Prabhupada had recorded this first album of chanting Hare Krishna in New York. And they were playing it on alternative radio stations in New York. And I was in New York, which is the birthplace of Krishna consciousness, isn't it, New York?
Your first contact was with that record.
It was what?
With that record, probably.
Yeah.
Seriously?
It was on the radio. Yeah, so I was listening.
That was my first contact.
Really? See?
In New York, at the Alan Coleman's Krishna Center.
Yeah.
But you heard on the radio.
I heard on the radio. They were playing, and they were playing on the alternative radio stations. And I was just like listening to alternative music. Of course, my favorite music was the folk music, not Bollywood music or anything like that. I was more sedate in my taste. And all of a sudden I heard this, Hare Krishna, Prabhupada chanting Hare Krishna. And I didn't know what it was or who it was. There was no knowledge of anything. It was just like a sound vibration unlike I've never heard before in my whole life. And then what happened is I heard it on the radio and I was just shocked. At that point, as everybody knows, I've always been into technology, so I had all this recording equipment. So I decided to just stay up all night and keep the radio on until they played it again. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know what it was. I didn't hear the announcement, this is A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami or whatever it was. I just heard it. And so I just kept the radio on, with my finger on the pause button or whatever it was with the recorder. And all of a sudden, it came on again, because they kept playing this on this radio station, this alternative radio station in New York. And then I heard it and recorded it, and I kept playing it for myself afterwards. And basically, my life changed at that point. I sort of lost interest in everything else. Somehow or other, I became... I wouldn't say completely nirupeksha, but at least interest in everything my parents wanted me to have interest in the university and, business or whatever like that. It was just I dropped everything. And I didn't know who it was. I just heard Prabhupada. So it was that Bhakti Latabija that sort of the seed of the creeper of devotion that just reawakened my soul from Prabhupada. And so then later on, because I had lost interest in everything, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. I also was engaged in some sort of meditation. I told the devotees the other day, one day we flew our airplane to a deserted island in the Bahamas to meditate.
Yeah, I told you that. And you told me that, like, you heard about Brahma 5 at about 19, and then at 21 you became, like, a devotee.
Yeah, 21 I became a devotee. So then... All right, I'm not a devotee yet. But anyway, so, just to be humble. So anyway, so... anyway, So, but I still didn't understand what that chanting was. But my life—I just wanted to become a yogi at that point. I was already a vegetarian, so then I flew to the Bahamas, landed on a deserted island, and I thought, now I'll just meditate. And Prabhupada had a different idea for me, so I sat down to meditate, and I was surrounded by wild boars because I was all by myself. I told you this story before. Then I thought, well, at least I can go swimming in the ocean, and then I saw these fins going back and forth. And there was no one around for 30, 40 miles, you know, it's just like, you don't take a chance of swimming.
So you saw sharks.
And so I went back, and I thought, what am I going to do with my life? I'm not interested in anything anymore. And so then I started to drive a taxi. And then the taxi driver, you can see how Krishna arranges everything, one taxi driver handed me a Krishna book. Out of the blue. It was right after it was published. And I read the Krishna book. I still didn't understand a bit of the philosophy. I read a little... I told the devotees a story before. I read a little bit about the little blue boy stealing butter and feeding it to the monkeys. And I didn't understand who the heck the blue boy was. But somehow or other, I kept getting this image of a blue boy feeding butter to the monkeys, and the monkeys eating so much they couldn't eat anymore, and he told his mother that butter was no good. And I just kept remembering that. And I was thinking, what, am I going crazy? This Maha Mantra, and this, I didn't know it was a Maha Mantra, this Hare Krishna stuff, and the little blue boy. And, you know, then in between, sort of, I like walked into a Hare Krishna temple, but they blew me out of the water. You know, they told me, first of all, I walked in and picked up a book I wanted to read, and the devotees told me, you're not qualified to read this book. It's Upanishad. They said, you have to hear from us. I said, can I just read? I'm universally educated, you know, I know how to read. And they said, no, you have to hear transcendental sound. You know, and I forget who it was. I mean, I forget right now. And they just... I said, okay. And another day I walked in, and then Amarendra Prabhu was giving class. And he was reading about the symptoms of Kali Yuga. And he looked at me and he said, you know, this is what's going to happen. You basically what's going to happen to you unless you join right away. You know, the she-jackals vomiting fire and everything like that. And you're going to be as short as a dwarf. You're going to be eating other human beings. I said, you ready to join? I said, hell no. And then, but it was Prabhupada. So then finally, after some time, I was avoiding the Hare Krishna devotees. But then word came to me that Prabhupada was coming to Gainesville, Florida, where I was. And it was just the idea or the spiritual energy preceded Prabhupada. You know, you can actually feel that. Whenever Prabhupada would visit a temple, it's not only the devotees were crazy before he came, that was there too, but there was like a spiritual energy that was like, it's like you have a boat going through the water and there's a wake that goes before the boat. Did you ever experience that, Mother Irma? There's a wake. So you would actually experience like a wave of energy overcoming everybody.
Before the boat got there.
Before Prabhupada got there. And it wasn't just that the devotees were passionate and painted the temple all night long. Like Prabhupada would always complain about, the temple always smells like wet paint. Because they're up the night. And Prabhupada would always complain why the devotees were all sleeping during his class, because they were up for the last 3 days without. I mean, Bhadri Narayan Maharaj always tells the story. One time Prabhupada looked and everyone was sleeping. And then Prabhupada says, this movement's going on only by Krishna's mercy. So, but it was really like a really potent spiritual force that proceeded, even probably by a week. So a week, you know, I had no intention of even saying Hare Krishna to a devotee again, basically. Or to speak of visiting a temple. But then a week before Prabhupada came, it was just like something over, I became haunted, basically. I said to my friends that I'm joining the movement. And they basically said to me, you have too much karma to join the movement. And I said, no, I'm joining. Well, the reason they said that, because I was supporting them and also cooking for them. They didn't know how they were going to live. That's why they joined shortly after me. So then just proceeded. Prabhupada, and then I joined the temple. And then we did so many crazy things when Prabhupada was coming. I remember swimming with alligators to get lotus flowers for Prabhupada. This place in Gainesville called Lake Alice, which is filled with alligators, literally. I mean, you can see their little snouts above the water and everything like that. But that's the place there were lotus flowers. And so the Prabhupada comes, and then it was just like entering into the spiritual world, the physical presence of Srila Prabhupada. And immediately it was like I recognized Prabhupada as my eternal spiritual master. So anyway, it was the sound vibration and Prabhupada's spirituality that preceded him. That was the point I'm making. Of course, the physical presence was indeed overwhelming, to say the least. And then, right after that, I asked Prabhupada for initiation. the first time I met Prabhupada. And the temple president, Amarendra, almost killed me for going over his head, not going through the proper system of recommendation yet. Even in those days. And then, anyway, so that was one experience I had with Prabhupada. And every experience I had with Prabhupada was very, very...
What did Prabhupada say when you asked him for initiation?
He said, you got to ask the temple president. But in another case I was there, the temple president was opposed, not with me, with someone else. They were, this was in Texas. I was in Texas one time, and I arranged a reception for Srila Prabhupada and everything like that. Temple president, I think was either Sasvaru, I think it was Sasvaru Prabhu, he was before his sannyasa at that time. And there were four devotees who came from Cleveland, you know what I'm talking about. Black devotees.
Yeah.
And nobody had ever seen them before. And at that time, it was very rare for someone of that particular race to actually join the movement. And so they came from Cleveland. Nobody had seen them. And they came to Prabhupada and they asked for initiation. The temple president went to Prabhupada and said, no, they can't take initiation. I don't know them. And Prabhupada overrode the temple president.
That's when I got second. There was a woman whose husband was not a devotee.
In Texas.
No, this was in Philadelphia when I got second initiation. Yeah. An Indian woman
whose husband was not a devotee.
And she had been practicing for 3 years. And the
temple
president would not recommend her.
He
said, I'm not
going to
recommend her. And so she went to Prabhupada and just...
So Prabhupada... And these are very good devotees nowadays. What are they? One of our god sisters?
Krishnanandi,
yeah. Lives in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. She's in Vrindavan.
And she's in Vrindavan now. So, very, very good devotee. And so Prabhupada, against the temple president, just gave them, and we were all shocked, How could Prabhupada do that without the temple president's authority? Anyway, so my first getting back to Gainesville, Florida, apart from the fact that I was just convinced Prabhupada was my guru and I asked him for initiation and everything like that, was that we had the opportunity to see Prabhupada, the first time we saw Prabhupada give initiation. And it was at 11 o'clock at night in his room, sitting on his bed in the gumsha. There's no fireside roast or anything like that. And it was right after we did a program. There was a TV program called Transcendental Broadcast. I don't know if you remember that one, in Gainesville. We went on the stage with Prabhupada and were dancing and chanting. Remember, I'd just been in the movement 1 week.
That particular point. It was like forever back then, though, right?
Yeah, it was just like, I was one of the older devotees. I was the head pujari at that time. They made me the head pujari.
Wow.
So, there's a lot of room for upward mobility in those days in the movement. And then, so then at night, Prabhupada called all the devotees into his room. So here he's sitting in his gamsha, wearing a gamsha, on a bed, in his room downstairs. I remember, it's very clear as if it was yesterday. And he probably was glowing. Prabhupada had golden skin, basically, and it was glowing golden. And the devotees, he called some devotees to give them initiation. That's when Dharmadas took initiation. That's when, I think Ananga Mundry took initiation at that time too. Yeah, Ananga Mundry took initiation at that time too, who was Sri Dandananda's wife previously. And then Bhagwat, he'd made a mistake. You know Bhagwat? Remember Bhagwat? The big Bhagwat? Prabhupada usually called him the fat. Prabhupada was very humorous, Went to a rest with Gaur Govinda Maharaj for some time. And Prabhupada said, Gaur Govinda Maharaj said, I need someone to help me. And Prabhupada said, take the fat one with you. Prabhupada was quite humorous. You always picture Prabhupada being very serious, but he's the same. Even in Gainesville, when I was with him, one of the first things, that was when the reporter asked him, why are so many young people with you? And Prabhupada said, what's the age for education? She said, young. She said, Prabhupada said, that's because you can't teach a gold fool new tricks. Another time I was with Prabhupada, it was when he gave that famous thing about when the girl asked you why you have a shaved head. And Prabhupada asked you why. and then Prabhupada said, it's better to have a cool head and warm legs, because the girl's head was wearing a mini skirt. So Prabhupada, another time, not just a little humorous stuff, that Prabhupada said. Prabhupada was on an airplane in Los Angeles. They used to have an airline called Pacific Standard Airline, where the stewardesses dressed like prostitutes. And Prabhupada said out loud, you should call this Prostitute Standard Airline. So Prabhupada had such a sense of humor. I mean, you really had to be with Prabhupada to hear his sense of humor. He was teasing, like with Purushottam, when Purushottam was talking about the moon landing, and then Purushottam went to the kitchen, he had some explosion, and then his face was all black, and they said, what happened to him? Prabhupada said, he's gone to the moon. So you were with Prabhupada, I mean, you heard all sorts of funny things with Prabhupada.
That's really good.
I mean, and I heard quite a few of these funny things when I was with Prabhupada. So anyway, so what was I talking about? Dallas. I think I was talking first about Dallas, Texas. I arranged a reception for Prabhupada there, and went on some preaching engagements with Prabhupada. He was alone in the car with Prabhupada. Yeah, a lot of there. I mean, I had a lot of personal association, like some devotees did, like Jayapataka Maharaj and other people. Yeah, that's right. I already mentioned that. Oh, yeah, with Bhagwat. Yeah, I want to mention Bhagwat. Yeah, that's where we started. So Bhagwat reached out for his beads with his left hand. And Prabhupada said, no, right hand. And he pulled the beads back or something like that. Bhagwat was shaking. Oh, my God, I'm not going to take any today. And then he got his beads. But that's the whole initiation right there. And there wasn't even a taking of vows there. It wasn't even like how many rounds you chant or anything like that. It was just, here's your beads. You have the recommendation of the temple president. Here's your beads. Your name is Dharmadas. You know Dharmadas in Miami? You don't know him. He's a really nice devotee. Anyone's met Dharmadas? No. Really, really nice devotee. He's married to this girl, Vantramurti. He's very nice. And Amarendra, too, Gayatri. That's when Amarendra and Gayatri took initiation, too. And then Prabhupada left. And so from that first meeting with Prabhupada, the impression was so strong, or first hearing from Prabhupada, the impression was so strong that basically my whole life is dedicated to serving Prabhupada. Because in every way imaginable, Prabhupada saved me from not knowing the purpose of life, saved me from going to God knows where, saved me from depression, you know, saved me from whatever, you know, whatever negative thing there is. You know, I owe everything to Prabhupada. And so at that point I decided to dedicate my whole existence, not just life, my whole existence to serving Srila Prabhupada. Anyway, that's my little talk. That's something you could say. This is much more.
I'm afraid everybody will just get it from me if I speak.
No, you have some. She has some experiences with her father.
Well, it's just interesting. Just it, some of the parallels with your experience were interesting. Just how I used to visit my sister in New York, and I'd go to Alan Coleman's Christian store and explain that happened. And I was 12. It was in 67. And I would just go in the shop and just listen to that record. And one time I asked Alan, the other side, and that's the Rubasic. I said, no, I like the other side. Just listen to the Prabhupada. I never bought the album. I didn't hear that one on the radio. Then in 69, I heard the Radha Krishna Temple album, exactly the same thing that you did. I listened to the radio until I heard it. It was like exactly. I heard it and they didn't say who it was. They didn't announce who I must have missed it. And so I just listened constantly until they played it one more time, and then I wrote down the Radha Krishna Temple. And then I had a dream that I owned every record in the world except that one. And I woke up and I wrote down the dream of my tune in the morning. I found that paper later when I moved in the temple. And then I went to New York and I found the record and it had the pictures in front of Krishna book. And this is also just interesting, you know, that I was at school in the library, I was 14, and there was this guy there, a real traveler, and he was like a friend of God, I didn't really know him. And he was reading Krishna book and had the same picture that was on the album. Back to him and he said, would you like to come to the temple? My temple? What the hell? So anyway, it was just interesting. But then also the devotees blew me up. Same. I went to the temple. This guy Bill, he later became a Raja Krishna. At that time, he was chanting 16 rounds, following principles, offering his food. He took me to the temple, and the first thing that preacher was Jagannath preached to me, and I left, and I said, I don't know what, I couldn't repeat what you said, but I agree with everything. They did let me buy a book, they let me buy Easy Journey to Other Planets, but I thought it was about, like, yogic travel to other planets, and after I got to page 10, I realized it wasn't, so I never finished. And then I went back to what do I do to join? My only thing I can think of is that she saw me, this guy, and she thought I was like with this guy. And maybe she didn't realize how young I was. Especially teenage girls, you can't always tell. So she must have thought that I was older than I was with my boyfriend or something. She just said, we have no room in the temple, you have to get your own apartment. And like, 14, I didn't say that joke with it. And she never told me to chant it. After that, I always say to people, yeah, I believe in Hare Krishna. Do you follow him? Like, no, because I thought I had to buy the part.
That's what I did.
Why, when I speak to new people, I always at least mention the four Vedas I'm chanting.
Yeah.
Because nobody said that to me. And then I was, I didn't go back again. I thought, why bother? You know, I can't.
Can't join?
I can't join. And then, when I was was 17, I used to meditate all the time. I mean, every day, I had my own system. I mean, I also had maps of India all over my wall, and I wear sari on Halloween. And, you know, and wear saffron silk sari. But anyway, I was in the summer when I was 17, I was meditating. I started to merge, I stopped, and I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. And then I thought, my whole life, since I was four, I always said, I want to find God. And then the year I found him, and I didn't like it. And so I decided, okay, I'm just going to be materialist. Anyway, then I found Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita at college, and that, as soon as I got the Gita, I didn't sleep, I didn't eat, I didn't go to my classes, I'm just like, this is what
you dropped out of college?
I dropped out towards the end of that year. I didn't want to drop out in the middle because I was only 17 and I thought my parents would be calling. But I ended up going to, I was working at the Museum of Science and Industry on a break, and I chanted Shapanishad from the record. And from that, I ended up staying at the temple. I met Yasumayananda and I'm on the train, and he looked at me, you know, a young girl, and he's just, I said, Hare Krishna. He's like, Hare Krishna.
What year was that?
I was 73.
73?
Yeah.
I'll tell you a funny story.
I was in Chicago,
I was the one who trained up Yashomati Nandas.
Oh, thank you so much.
I gave him the original brahmachari training.
You mean the Indian one?
Yeah, he joined in Chicago.
Yeah, this was in Chicago.
And I was his brahmachari trainer.
Oh, thank you so much for that.
He said, I trained them up.
Oh, thank you. That's
the funny thing. That's why Bhasha Ghosh won't say anything negative about me.
Well, he and I got initiated at the same time.
Yeah. But because I was in charge of the brahmacharis and I trained him up. I trained both Bhasha Ghosh and Yasir Mati.
I mean, that's why he wouldn't look at me. He's like, Hare Krishna.
Because I was the one who trained them like that.
I'm sorry, it's so nice to look at the fake women's face.
And then he's handing me back to God and he's take back to God. I said, I don't travel with money. I only bring a dime for a phone call. He's like, yeah, sure. I said, no, really. He says, come to the Sunday feast. I said, I work on Sunday. He's like, yeah, sure. He has me a life card.
Your training is still sticking to this day.
Yes.
Gosh, you know, yeah. Thank you so much.
That's why neither one criticizes me in spite of my being at the opposite side politically from them. Because they consider me to be their sixth guru.
Were you at the Everestine Temple in January, February 73?
I was there for the installation of the deity.
Well, that's when I joined you. Were you there in January 7th? January, February 73?
I don't remember. I don't remember exactly when I came and when I left. Because what happened is that as soon as Rita Nanmarsh took sannyas, I was his first brahmachari assistant. But then we visited Chicago, and I told him, I said, I can't stand serving you anymore. You know, it was too much. I mean, sannyasis in those days were...
Yeah, well, he was a little much.
He was over the top.
Way
over the top in those days. And I said, I can't stand it. Just leave. You say, I want to stay in the temple. So I was so burnt out, you know, PTSD at that time, that when he visited the temple, he wanted me to help carry his bags. He wanted me to help carry his bags back to his car, and I said, I don't do that anymore.
You were traumatized.
I was traumatized.
You know how they said they wouldn't let you get the book?
Yeah.
When I visited the Boston temple during my last semester of college, went with sari and tilak.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm running out of tilak. Can I get some more tilak? They said, no, we don't give tilak to anybody unless you live in the temple.
Oh.
And I said, my neck beads broke. Can I buy some neck? No, we don't give neck beads unless you live in the temple.
Yes, I think things were like that. In the early days, it was pretty heavy stuff.
And I said, could I come on a Saturday and stay overnight? Because it's a 4-hour drive.
Yeah.
So I could go to Sunday feast. They said, no, we don't let people just stay overnight in the temple. Baba Maharaja told a story in the recent BBT meeting. He had stayed over. And he had another Bhagavad Gita, a different translation of the problem.
Yeah.
And when the temple authorities saw that he just was visiting.
Yeah.
When they saw that he had another Bhagavad Gita, they said, we don't allow any personal books in the temple.
I mean, we used to be really fanatic like that.
But if you think about the first time I saw Prabhupada.
Yeah.
So that was, I was already initiated, and that was in the summer of 74 in Chicago for the first Rock Theatrical
Theater. Right. 74, and I was in South America at that time.
So yeah, he came in, and I first saw him on the Vyasa Sun. And so by that time I was 19, I was pregnant with my family. And Alpha was talking about how we want to see God, but we can't even see the soul. And he was talking about how that, you know, we're all controllers, but the supreme controller is God. I felt like I was listening to a tape recording.
Mm-hmm.
I had the same experience as Alpha himself, was listening to a tape. And I thought, this means that Prabhupada was already here in his recordings.
Mm-hmm.
That I was already with Prabhupada, but I didn't need his physical. And that when he would leave, he would still be there without his physical
wow.
presence. And it was kind of a mystical experience. I really felt like I was listening to it. It was very profoundly comforting.
Mm.
But I also wanted some personal.
Mm.
And it was nice later that morning we got to go in Papa's room.
With your father?
With my father. Prabhupada had just been talking to a reporter, and Prabhupada had the below table, and he had an asana behind the table, like come out in front of the table, he was going to do some kushan. And the reporter was saying, why did your disciples pick you up in that big fancy barn? Prabhupada said, yes, I knew you might need this, that's why I want to see this. That was really sweet. Prabhupada was sitting like this.
Yeah.
And his dhoti was out, you could see his leg and his feet. And I kept thinking about how his feet were just like the pavements.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Actually, it was a year ago, I was talking to one of the children. He was talking about meditating on Prabhupada's feet. And I was remembering how Prabhupada's feet were just like a baby. I mean, they look like a baby that doesn't walk or crawl. And we were talking about this last year. It was almost exactly this time.